Blog Talk Radio.
Oh. Oh, it's fun. Yep.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, October 1st, 2024, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. We will be in Arkansas for an event in 2 weeks, so our next show after tonight will be October 29th. Our very special guest this evening is Lynn Harden, a longtime friend of Lavendar's who has always possessed an entrepreneur's spirit. After high school and college, her first job was working for Braniff International as an airline hostess. Lynn volunteered for the military air transport system, flying U.S. service personnel to various stations around the world during the Vietnam conflict. She spent several years in the education and investment arena, working with the California Teachers Association. Lynn moved to Florida and established the Key West Tennis and Scuba Center, then consulted in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and St. Petersburg on land use. Lynn was recruited to the Oklahoma City as the first development director for the Oklahoma School of Science and Mathematics, raising over $35 million for the school. In 1994, after a life-changing auto accident, Lynn authored The Magic of Why, a groundbreaking book and curriculum providing a process to examine your purpose. Leading her high school alumni, she created Friends of NWC, which has raised over $2 million to impact students and teachers. She produced the Vagina Monologues in Oklahoma City, and in 2019, she was inducted into the Order of the Roundtable, her school hall of fame. She initiated and facilitated passage of the Oklahoma Breast Cancer Bill, which continues to fund mobile mammograms across Oklahoma. She was elected and served as chairman of the Oklahoma City Public School Board. She had a vision after the Million Man March and in 2023 created a 501c3 foundation, Women's Imagine Network, otherwise WIN, great acronym. So the idea of a Million Women March was born. With imagination and inspired effort, a million women from home will affect positive improvements for women and families. And you can check out that website. It is womensimaginenetwork.org. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest and hope to Starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we'd like to thank Jada and Fiona for hosting the switchboard tonight for those who may have a comment or question for Lynn. Our main website is starseedhotline.com, where the Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. We also have a daily transit service to help you navigate your life and mission with greater success, even if you know little or nothing about astrology. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you'll get a window of 10 hours of power. Find out exactly when it happens by requesting your solar return timing. If you order that a week or two before your birthday, that would be good. Or if you want a reading of that chart a month or two before your birthday, more 2 months. So first of all, I want to introduce Anastasia with her fascinating Starseed News.
Well, thank you, Ariel. Good evening, everybody. Great to be with you. Hey there. It's going to be an interesting night tonight with our guest. In the meantime, I get to tell you what I've discovered that I want to share with you tonight. There's something called the memory of mankind. You know, I'm glad I'm not the only one to think of this. We were in a discussion with some friends not too long ago discussing how perhaps the history of humanity would be recorded in the digital age. It would be so easily lost. And what would we do about that? Well, other people have been thinking about that, much smarter than me. And they have developed something called the Memory of Mankind, which is a preservation project that was funded back in 2012. Its main goal is to preserve the knowledge about present human civilization from oblivion and collective amnesia, which, as we can see, is very easily entered into these days. People are very forgetful about what happened last week, let alone what happened 20 years ago. What they've done is they've printed information on ceramic tablets and store it in the salt mine of Hallstatt, Austria. Now, this project aims to create what they call the time capsule of our era, letting anyone participate by allowing them to submit texts and images. You can do it. And in contrast to the National Archives, content for MOM is collected by those who take part. It is a collective bottom-up history of humankind. And they say the primary ambition of MOM is to preserve an image of the current era created by numerous participants from all over the planet. MOM intends to also contain information which our society is obliged to take forward in time, in the future, such as descriptions of nuclear waste repositories. Pretty important. Now, the most obvious ambition often described in the media is preserving our knowledge. But this is not the primary goal of MOM. It serves as a time capsule. It is both the story of humanity in a time frame of millennia and a backup in a time frame of decades. In our times where global warming, nuclear danger, and biological warfare threaten the existence of civilization, saving the core knowledge and culture acquired over centuries is a backup measure. And in case of a collapse of civilizations, the MOM project could help survivors to rebuild civilization. Now, there's another story related to this, very closely connected, but it's particularly interesting because it involves crystals. They tell us now that the human race has a particular, very important backup plan. It's one thing to remember the history of humanity. It's another thing to be able to replicate humanity in case, well, let's just say we're rather hard to come by in the future. Scientists have created a form of information mortality, which is meant to instruct future species on how to recreate humans. If humanity should ever go extinct, scientists now have a backup plan, a coin-sized crystal which stores the entire human genome. Future species could use this record as an instructional manual to recreate humans some millions, even billions, of years from this moment.
Wow.
It does sound like science fiction, but it is very real, according to a statement from England's University of Southampton. Scientists inscribe the genetic data onto a 5D memory crystal, equivalent to fused quartz, a type of glass that is recognized to be the most durable data storage material. The lead researcher is an optoelectronics expert at the University of Southampton, and he said that they were inspired by the possibility that this technology could assist in the reconstruction of a person using stored genetic information, thus providing a form of information immortality that could safeguard human identity long into the future. How ambitious can you get?
Yeah.
The research team transcribed the human genome using ultra-fast lasers that encoded the data onto tiny voids in silica as small as 20 nanometers. I'm telling you, that is ultra-tiny. The information is translated into five different dimensions of its nanostructures, their height, length, width, orientation, and their position, the five-dimensional. Etched onto the crystal space is a visual key containing depictions of hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, and nitrogen atoms, as well as the DNA double helix and its four nucleotide bases. The team included a breakdown of a chromosome's molecular structure, as well as how it fits into a cell, and they included the drawings of a man and a woman. Just just chew on that, you guys. Just chew on that for a while. First of all, of course, what got my attention was the crystal structure and the coding of information, which certainly not new to Starseed. But there you have it. Their science is using it. So if anybody ever gives you a sideways glance about what we know about crystals, well, here it is. It's real life. They're storing data on it. And the article went on to say that they are so intent upon having this decoded because they thought out all the possible scenarios, that, such as when we dig up hieroglyphics or uncover some things in ancient societies, we can't decode the language. Well, they have made a key that they included with this material, which are things, pictures such as a mountain or a tree or whatever object in our everyday lives, and included the words from every language and a code or a method to break down those languages so that any intelligent species of any kind that finds our remains will be able to reconstruct the language and therefore understand what they're looking at and be able to read it and recreate what they need. Now, of course, they're going to have to somehow figure out, we're pretty much in the same position as Starseed, but they have to figure out that this tiny piece of sand, silica, bit of crystal, is encoded and be able to figure out how to get into it. And if they can get that far, then they've got everything they need to cover all of this, every bit of information we have about our identity as created beings on the physical side of it. And isn't that something?
Wow.
Well, in Africa, let's go back down to Earth for a minute, although this is very much about the Earth, what I just read to you, and something to really reflect on. Okay, in Africa, the continent's foremost intergovernmental body has ruled, after 9 years of deliberation, that the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo should hand back parts of the giant Kahuzi-Biega National Park to its ancestral owners, the native Batwa people. This is enormous. It's a massive deal, not only for the park itself, but because it sets a legal precedent among all member states of the African Union that recognizes indigenous peoples have a crucial role in safeguarding the environment and in protecting biodiversity. This is happening all over the world. Indigenous cultures are being recognized as the keepers of the earth. And indigenous groups have long argued, of course, that they are in the best position to conserve and protect forests, having been successful stewards of lands for thousands of years. They've got the proof. And in Brazil, the Axanica people are a shining example of this, as they have successfully protected and restored their territory in the Amazon. It is now a model for an ambitious project to help 12 indigenous territories in the western Amazon, amounting to 1.6 million acres of the U.S. state of Delaware, to get repaired. They say we are expanding everything that we did in a smaller area and taking it to an entire region. This is not only about implementing a project. What is at stake is cultural change. It is essential to protect life, the territory, and the peoples of these territories, protecting the indigenous lifestyle. Tremendous. Wow. It's great. Just great, tremendous. Here's another thing in favor of planet Earth. The state of California is suing ExxonMobil for plastic pollution deception. That's right. In the first-of-its-kind lawsuit, California alleges ExxonMobil deceived the public into thinking that plastic recycling could solve the plastic waste and pollution crisis when they clearly knew this was not possible. What do you know about that? The company is the largest oil and gas company based in the U.S. Americas, third largest by revenue among all other industries, and the eighth largest in the world. In a report from earlier this year, the Center for Climate Integrity found that plastic producers knew for decades that recycling was too difficult and expensive, but they promoted it as a solution anyway. Unbelievable. We've been hoodwinked. Well, the president for the Center for Climate Integrity called California's lawsuit the most important legal action to date in the global fight against plastic pollution. It comes hot on the heels of a survey that revealed that the majority of voters in America support holding the plastic and fossil fuel industries accountable for allegedly deceiving the public about the feasibility of recycling. It concluded that if an investigation results in a lawsuit, it would be the first of its kind, and our findings show the public would support it. 70% of participants said they felt strongly the plastic industry should be held accountable for the worldwide plastic waste crisis, with 59% responding the fossil fuel industry should as well. And while the lawsuit will still have to play out in court, it's encouraging news that states are working to hold companies like ExxonMobil accountable for their actions in exacerbating public health and environmental crises like plastic pollution and ultimately climate change. Now, you know, I mean, over the empty number of years, have I said, we used to get this in a glass jar, we used to get this in a paper sack, we used to get bread, you know, wrapped up in wax paper. Did it keep 100 years? No, it did not. It would go stale, like food does and should anymore with all of the preservatives they put in it. Stuff never goes rotten. And they wrap it in plastic, and they, you know, just cover us up in plastic. And it's very profitable, and it is a petroleum byproduct. What do you do with it? Let's make stuff with it that we can sell. And then we'll just tell people that we can recycle it. So there it is, a big lie. And now we're covered up in plastic, and somebody's actually doing something about it. Bravo to the Center for Climate Integrity. Okay.
So well, all those little numbers that they print on the bottom of plastic containers are just bogus?
Right. Well, they said that ExxonMobil knew very well that they're asking the impossible. Essentially, that recycling was going to be too difficult and cost too much money to actually make it work. So I wouldn't say that those numbers on the bottom are bogus, because clearly, you know, they show how to sort your stuff. But the fact is, look at all the plastic and look at how much is not being done. My city I live in does not offer that. It infuriates me, but they don't. And I'm not the only, this is not the only city all over the country. They're just ignoring it. Why? Because it's too difficult and expensive. And so, you know, it really is a fake solution. It's just not practical. It doesn't work. And with absolutely virtually everything that we purchase, everything's cased in plastic. I mean, wow. So you tell people that you have an answer, and then they get excited and say, well, at least I can recycle. And they buy the special cans, and they do what they can, and they rinse their bottles. They cooperate, and they do their part. And for what to what avail? Bless their hearts for doing it. And some of it is really put to use. But the infinite amount of it is in the ocean and everywhere else. It's in our bodies, for crying out loud. It's in the fish that we eat. Excuse me. So they knew this was going to happen, and they didn't tell the truth. And that's the problem. So, you know, when we live in a society that's all about the money, this is what happens. Well, speaking of money.
All I can say is that when Pluto goes into Aquarius for the last time, which it will do on November 19th, next month.
Yeah, tell us about that. Tell me about that.
Well, the age of Aquarius is about truth and transparency. So hopefully all of those, you know, all that dirty lies will come out, be exposed, and then corrected.
We sure are seeing a lot of that already, aren't we? The masks are coming off. And it's a gradual, I think, like anything else with astrology, gradual entry into before it gets full-blown. So,
it started in February of 2021. Kind of had the kickoff.
Right, there you go.
So, it's a process, but...
So can you imagine if you were a big company with something to hide, you should be getting nervous right about now.
Yeah.
Because somebody's going to find out. Somebody's going to find out, and we're not going to be happy with you. So there it is.
Yeah.
But here's a story about money that gets put to good use eventually. the Trevi Fountain in Rome. I know you've seen it. I'll try to paint you a picture, but every year, the more fortune in coins is thrown into the famous Trevi Fountain in Rome. People toss coins. They make a wish, right?
Uh-huh.
And every year, they vacuum up these coins, and they use them to feed, clothe, and house the city's poor. What a great idea. Well, you find out how much they vacuum. Anyway, this is an 18th century marble fountain in Piazza di Trevi. It's the largest Baroque fountain in the city and one of the most famous fountains in the world. Backdrop for the fountain is Palazzo Poli, very old Baroque immense building, whatever that means. But tourists will flock to the spot throughout the year, and tradition has it that if you put your back to the fountain and toss a coin over your left shoulder with the right hand, it supposedly guarantees that you will one day return to what they call the Eternal City. Whatever. Anyway, the tradition was born from the 1954 film, Three Coins in the Fountain, about three American women living in Rome who wish upon the Trevi for love in the city. At the 27th Academy Awards in 1955, the film received two Academy Awards, one for Best Cinematography and the Best Song by Frank Sinatra, and was nominated for the best. Well, the ongoing result, continues to this day, of that movie, is that coins worth over $1 million are thrown into its waters every year, which are then all vacuumed up and put towards good causes. Can you imagine over $1 million?
Holy moly!
there's something, a charity managed by the Catholic Church is called Caritas, receives this significant annual windfall, and they tell us they use it to fund soup kitchens, homeless shelters, and free supermarkets. It also goes toward the upkeep of a complex on the outskirts of Rome, which houses a nursing home, a canteen, and dental office for residents that live in poverty. So there you have it. Over $1 million in the fountain, thanks to a movie from 1954.
Wow.
Excuse me. Well, those of you that garden, I thought you might enjoy this. You can use old coffee grounds to give your garden a boost. Now, there is a caveat, and I'll get to that. But fact being, if you're a home gardener, there are three ways coffee grounds can benefit your plants. Throwing old coffee grounds down the sink can lead to plumbing problems. Believe you me, I've got the invoice to prove it. Don't put your coffee grounds in the kitchen sink. But if you throw them in the trash, that'll cause them to end up in a landfill, where they will, they tell us, emit greenhouse gases, like methane. And we don't want that. So what is the best way to dispose of them? Well, we can put them in the compost pile, or we can put them on the plants in our garden or window box. And here are the reasons why. It's a fertilizer to your soil. Coffee grounds are rich in nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, and copper. That means when you put them in the garden, they nourish the soil. These elements and minerals improve drainage, water retention, and aeration, providing a perfect environment for microorganisms and plants. Nice little universe in there you're making. Coffee grounds are a pest deterrent. They deter slugs, rabbits, fire ants, definitely cats, and snails. And they attract earthworms in a huge way. All want earthworms in our garden. The minerals and elements in coffee attract the worms to your garden and make it thrive. Worms are, indeed, a very good friend to gardeners because they help aerate the soil, which helps take in water and air. And their doo-doo, sorry about that, is known as vermicasting. And people actually use that to also enrich the soil. Now, here's the thing, the caveat I was talking about. Before sprinkling coffee grounds on your garden, make sure that you rinse them very well first. Thus, you prevent them from making your garden too acidic. Coffee grounds to spare out of your pot are highly acidic. And on top of that, avoid adding coffee grounds willy-nilly. Don't just do it at random. Do some research to check which of your plants can benefit from coffee grounds and which won't like it. So,
cool.
And by the way, if you don't drink coffee, but you'd like to try the coffee grounds to help your garden, go to a local coffee shop. All the cups of coffee that they make every day, they throw out a lot of grounds, and maybe some of them will give you some grounds for free. So there you have it. Well, this is a wild story, you guys. Unbelievable. This comes straight out of Japan. Check this out. In good news for Japanese workers who fear their employer's fury when they quit their jobs, there are now agencies that will quit for them. A young woman, 24 years old, paid a U.S. company $140 to employ a proxy resignation agent when she first attempted to resign from her job at a bank in Tokyo. The proxy explained that he was met with sighs of exasperation from the boss, who started shouting and thumping at his desk.
Okay.
We find out from this article that for Westerners, changing jobs is something positive. But for the Japanese, it's wicked to quit. Really? Wow. Wow. Sometimes I think us Americans just need to get out more. We don't know enough of what the world is like. All right. Well, listen to this. Y'all know, maybe, no, the young people are listening to me will not have a clue. But you remember Ariel, I hope. You can deny it. I understand if you want to pretend not to know who Twiggy is. Twiggy, the face of the 1960s, is hanging up her miniskirt. Wow, that's a good thing if you ask me. Her name is really Dame Leslie Lawson, and she says she has swapped miniskirts for longer attire despite disagreeing with age labels. Now, Dame Leslie Lawson is also known as Twiggy. She came to define the 1960s with her cropped haircut, graphic makeup, and rebellious fashion sense, wearing scandalously short hemlines. The model and designer, who has just turned 75 years old, thinks the time has come to trade her miniskirts for a longer, more modest attire. She was speaking to something called My Weekly Magazine, said, quote, "When it comes to fashion, I don't like all these age labels, all that you should, you know, wear only certain things when you're 20, 30, or whatever. But I do make an exception when it comes to miniskirts and hot pants. The only time I wear shorts is when I'm on holiday, and they're proper shorts, not hot pants," end quote. Well, I'll tell the rest of you out there that Twiggy was initially known for her thin, actually skinny build, and her androgynous appearance. And which were considered, by the way, to result from her enormous eyes, long eyelashes, and short hair. She was named the face of 1966 by the Daily Express at the modest age of 16 and voted British Woman of the Year. By 1967, she had modeled in France, Japan, and the U.S. and appeared on the covers of Vogue. Her fame had spread worldwide. Indeed, it did. Well, discussing her birthday milestone, the British grandmother of five said the secret to staying fit is eating well and not overindulging. She said she does not believe in retirement, saying that if you want to continue working, you should, and that older people add more to society. Finally, she said, being young isn't about age. It's about being a free spirit. A free spirit who's now wearing modest shorts and longer clothes, longer skirts. No more miniskirts for this 75-year-old free spirit. Oh, boy. Well, Finnish scientists have discovered promising antibiotic candidates from microbes found beneath the Arctic Ocean sea floor. The compounds are derived from something called actinobacteria, and they show potential in reducing bacterial virulence without fostering resistance. Huge, because that is a growing concern in antibiotic development. One of the strains not only inhibited the growth of E. coli, but decreased its severity. The University of Helsinki team has high hopes, they say, for the future of this important research. It's absolutely possible many more of these compounds are waiting to be discovered beneath the ocean floor. That's just tremendous.
Wow.
Okay, well, I didn't make this up, I promise you. You couldn't make this up. There's all out pandemonium in China. Zoogoers have been left outraged after discovering that the so-called pandas they were cooing over were just painted dogs. The duped visitors claimed they only realized the scam at the Shanwei Zoo when one of the apparent pandas started panting and barking, according to local news. The zoo initially tried to wash its hands of the sham by bizarrely claiming the animals were a breed of panda dogs. The zoo later came clean, though, and admitted it had just died two chow chows, a breed of spitz that happens to be popular in northern China. Ah, boy. Pandemonium in China.
Oh.
Fake pandas. Okay. Well, in closing tonight, special story. Dogs, did you know, cry tears of happiness? Tell us that humans and dogs have been enjoying a symbiotic relationship of nurturing and trust for thousands of years. We know that. Dogs make people feel safer and loved, and humans nurture their canine companions, providing them with a warm place to sleep, affection, and, of course, treats. The result? The significant and lasting bond. With all the love that connects humans and pooches, scientists wonder if the canine half of the equation teared up more when they experienced a flood of emotion, like humans do. Now, according to new research, the answer is yes. The eyes of pups do flood with tears on a regular basis when they get emotional, like when they're reunited with their human, according to phys.org. They say, we found that dogs shed tears associated with positive emotion. This is from a professor at the Laboratory of Human-Animal Interaction and Reciprocity in Japan, by the way. And the guy is the author of the research. He said, we made the discovery of oxytocin as a possible mechanism underlying it. You know, oxytocin, the cuddle hormone?
Yeah.
The results of the study, increase of tear volume in dogs after reunion with owners is mediated by oxytocin, has been published in the journal Current Biology. A few years ago, the researcher noticed that when his poodle was nursing her puppies, she had tears in her eyes. That made him think that the love hormone oxytocin might cause an increase in tear production. The research team already knew that dogs and humans release oxytocin when they interact. They measured the volume of tears the dogs had before and after they were reunited with their humans, and found that when they reconnected with them, their tear volume increased. However, when the pups connected with someone they weren't familiar with, they did not produce more tears. Dogs have become a partner of humans, and we can form bonds, the researcher said. In this process, it is possible that the dogs can show teary eyes during interaction with the owner and would be cared for by the owner more. The research team hasn't yet looked into whether dogs produce tears when they're unhappy. They also don't know if they do so when they're reunited with their canine friends, but they're still looking. That's just, we all know that dogs are exactly that special.
Yeah.
You ever loved a dog deeply? No, none of us are here are any the least bit surprised. You know, you get a special dog and you look into those eyes. Sacred experience, really. Well, I'm going to leave you tonight with a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside it.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is a good one. It's absolutely right. From my heart to each one of you, have a beautiful couple of weeks, everybody. I love y'all. Thank you, Ariel.
Thank you, too.
See you next time.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, Lynn, I'm going to get your microphone open. And we also have Lavendar. I'll get your mic open.
No.
All right.
I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm not
you're listening. Oh, okay. So, Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's so good to see that that you have followed through. I remember when you were at the Quest that you were talking about this in as a concept, and now you've turned it into reality, as you have done so many other times with other ideas and visions that you've had. So just to tell us how this, you know, just kind of organically, what I know you were, inspired by the Million Man March. So just take it from there.
Okay. Well, Ariel, I
Lynn, dropped off. I think she was having trouble getting in before, and it just she dropped off. So we're just going to wait for her to come back on. And let's see. Well, I had a bit of a weather update. One of our producers, Kathy, is still without power after the storm. She lives in South Carolina. And she said it's just really devastated that area. And, you know, it came through. I live in North Georgia. And it rained, but it wasn't as bad as some summer squalls. So I guess it just, like hurricanes, unpredictable. And I know, well, Jada, let me get your mic open here, and we can just chat for a minute before, to see, let Lynn get back online. So, yeah, Jada and Fiona, I just opened up your mics, and I'll watch to see for when Lynn gets back on the switchboard. So, Jada, you live in Alabama, and just, you know, tell us, give us your local weather synopsis.
Well, we were fortunate with this one. It went well to the east of us, but we did have some strong thunderstorms, I think on Wednesday night before it hit, and winds maybe 25 miles an hour top, so nothing dangerous, didn't lose power. We were very fortunate compared to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, it was kind of your turn because you've been hit so many times. You know, Alabama's just right there, and you live kind of close to the coast, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we actually had worse weather from Francine, the one that hit Louisiana a few weeks ago. I think we got about 10 inches of rain with that one, but it was spread out over a day or so, so it wasn't anything. There was some coastal flooding, but no major damage.
Well,
so it
thank
is
God
hurricane
for that.
Season, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, it is. And Fiona, you live in North Carolina. And,
I do live in North Carolina, yes. Mm-hmm.
So you were saying that some areas were without power as well?
Yeah, so for the course of my job, I commute over to Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm in Wake Forest, which is northeast of Raleigh. But I drive down to Charlotte, and I do my work out of there. And the place that I stay at while I'm down in Charlotte is the tippy top of a lake called Lake Norman. And I'm at the northwestern tip, so I'm almost close to Hickory, North Carolina. And from there, that's kind of the foothills. You're going up into the mountains where all of the major damage took place. And while I was there, we had, fortunately, because the place I am staying in, which is now tiny homes, used to be a campground. I believe that they wired the place differently. We had power while most of the people did not have power around us, though our internet and our Wi-Fi and phone capability was completely shut down. Until I drove closer into the airport, we didn't have any of that. Now, Lake Norman itself, where I was, now we're directly downstream from Lake Lure, and they expected that dam to break, possibly, and it didn't. But being at the lake, it was already kind of brimming over the shores, but we were spared from that dam breaking. And
wow.
I'm up on a terraced area there. There's a terrace, like three terraces, and I'm up two terraces, so I've got about a 40-foot leeway. But being terraced, it could be a bit muddy, you know. So
yeah.
We were relatively unscathed. One of the days I went down to the airport, I was going to fly out to Las Vegas. We were the only flight going, and that was it was, you know, a little. We were the only flight that went to Las Vegas that day. Let's just say. And it looks like our guest Lynn has
popped back
onto our studio screen here.
Yeah.
And
cool.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Well, Fiona and Jada, thanks for helping me fill the time while we waited for Lynn to get back on. So
very welcome. You're welcome.
Go back over to Lynn. Thanks, girls.
Okay. Bye for now.
Okay, I'm going to get these mics opened up. Well, hey, Lynn.
Hi.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry. My phone just went. I have been traveling today, and I didn't realize that my phone was totally out of power. And so I'm talking away. I said, "Is anyone there?" So I'm delighted to be back. So let's go back to the Million Man March in 1995, 1997, and I'm in my home, and I see this plaza completely filled, and I said to my friend, you know, I know that every man that attended this march, somebody or somehow could get the gas, the travel, the food, the accommodations, whatever. They had to have spent $1,000 each. I said, what if 1 million women stayed home and through a nonprofit could take a tax deduction for $1,000 one-time gift that we endowed and had $1 billion as the endowment. So now you've got this block of $1 billion that you don't spend any of the principal of, and you fund a billion-dollar endowment can throw off $10 to $60 million. So if every year, and you know, I believe if we have 1 million women that are engaged and we're doing good work, we could have a $5 billion endowment. So where we don't spend any of the principal, and we actually fund a four-legged stool for women in health, education, public policy, and finance, so that women, we have the ability to principal. I have been working for women's issues, you know, as you know, and Lavender knows, for at least the last 25 years. And the facts are that where I believe the women make a mistake is about the money. We have got to have a base that we can work from. If we want to be on paid boards, if we want to be involved and at the table, we have got to have the financial security that we really haven't been able to put together. And it was, and as you know, we were, you know, several times together that I've talked about this concept. And when I was in Florida not long ago, well, it's been almost 8 months ago, I guess, I finally just got so distressed over what we were facing as females to have done all of the work that we've done to really give ourselves some identity, and then to have this just stripped away where our health care isn't. We don't even have, we can't even have control of our own health care. So it really was distressing to me, and I said, it's time. And Lavendar has been telling me it's time for several years, so here we are. So we now have, it's called Women's Imagine Network. It's a 501c3 charitable educational nonprofit, which is tax deductible. And we are building a billion-dollar endowment.
That is so brilliant.
What?
It's so brilliant, yeah. And I love the simplicity of your website.
You got to see it.
Oh, yeah. It's really well done. And that I had to do a screen capture of that, of your, like, your landing page, where it says there's nothing more powerful than a group of organized women.
Well, and the truth is, that is absolutely the truth. I was involved in I'm here in Oklahoma, and many years ago, when I first was recruited back here, there was a group of women that were creating a, they had a fashion show every year, and very high end and well attended, and the tickets were high, and all of that went on. But I said, how much money are you raising for breast? They were doing the fashion show every year for breast cancer research, and it took them a year to plan and get organized. And so it was around $17,000 to $20,000. And I said, you know, research, we can't even start, you know. So I had heard that California had taken six sessions, but they passed a cigarette tax in California for breast cancer. Well, I called our tax commission here in Oklahoma and said, if we had a 2-cent tax on cigarettes, about given what was spent last year, what kind of tax would that be? It was about $6 million a year. Well, now you're talking about some money. The problem was the tobacco group here is so strong that we did not get a 2-cent tax on cigarette, but we did get a funded piece from the state, which was three times matched, which gave us $1 million, and then we have a license plate. So for the last 15 years, the Oklahoma Breast Cancer Bill, which we passed in one session because 15 to 25 women would meet in my living room every Tuesday for the entire session, and we marched the halls, and I can promise you the men on both the Senate and the House side would rather have chewed nails than to have to deal with this onslaught of women going down the halls in the capital of Oklahoma City. It is absolutely true. And I think women don't realize how really powerful we are. The truth is, we make most of the decisions on how money is spent in the family. We make most of the decisions on what car is bought, what color the car is, what color the house is painted, what color, you know, what are the flowers going to look like. We sign something like 87 to 90% of every check written in the United States is signed by a woman.
Wow.
We have the power. We don't use it. I always, you know, I often say it's sort of like pat us on the head and tell us to go do a bake sale. Because we're not in the game of the big money, and it's where we have to play if we are going to level this playing field at all. these men come out of politics. They are deciding what all of the issues on what's in our food, where our gas is going, how our environment is, all of the issues that are so personally important to women, because they're personally important to our children, and we realize that. And it has always been, you know, the men are kind of who's in the top floor and who's in the basement. And it's hierarchical in our buildings, in the way we build things, in the Twin Towers, in all of this modeling that we do. We absolutely do a top-down model that is a very male hierarchical model. And women like to sit around the campfire and, you know, if you get this and you get this, and we'll bring all this together and we can have, you know, now we can all have dinner. We can all be together. So and we have not exercised the power that we have, in my opinion. And I think it is so time. We are being so pushed to stand up and stand together.
Oh, wait. This is the most critical, you know, the shift that we're going through on so many levels. It is so critical. I just love that image of a team of women, you know, marching up and down the halls. I mean, I could just feel the intimidation because, yeah, you know, it's not to say that, you know, there aren't men that are balanced and open and rational, but yeah, it is kind of it's still a man's world, although that is changing. And a million women.
But it is changing so slowly, and I'll tell you, with this last Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade, and where we don't even have health care, women do not have health care. We do not have the same care that my mother had or my grandmother had, because you cannot go into a hospital with a knee because the doctors are being penalized for helping us.
Oh, I know. It seems perverse. That
it's
archaic.
Is unacceptable. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a perfect thing to say. It is archaic.
And as I was looking at your website, I might have misunderstood, but can you have like a team, like if you know, three or four or five women want to get together and all chip in for the $1,000, and you can have members like that as well?
Absolutely. And we don't want the $1,000 to be in any way prohibitive. I have donors on that are giving $10 a week, you know, and that's perfectly fine. And I have let the I've had a couple of corporate companies that have asked me, oh, well, could we contribute? And I said, you may if you contribute $1,000. And I honestly don't care if it's in a man's name or a woman's name. None of us care. Our board doesn't care. But if it's a corporate gift, it has to be in 10. If it's a $10,000 donation, then it's got to be in 10 people's names. There is going to be no pay to play here. This is all $1,000 for one person, you know, and over time. So this is why this is so important, because we can do this, and then I believe there are a million women in New York that could do this, that can do $1,000. You know, we're going to divide the country up into 10 segments based on population and sort of have a captain in each section. And then we can, we'll just build and grow and very, just as women do. You know, my dad used to say, well, you can telegraph and you can telephone or you can tell a woman.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's an old saying, but it's still true.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Do you hear me?
Hey, yes, yeah, yeah, I've got your mic open.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. This is Lavendar and Faraway Water, and we would like to contribute $1,000 toward this great event that's about to happen.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, you just go on the website and...
We'll do that. We'll be doing that in the next 30
minutes.
You'll see it.
Thank you so much. Well, we have a wonderful, wonderful board. And anyone that wants to get involved, we want you involved. This is not about a hierarchy because the four areas that we're working in, the education, the health, we want people that have been in healthcare. One of our board members that started with me when I just finally got so fed up she births babies at home. And so she's been in healthcare for at least 20 years. And so she will help, and anyone that is interested in women's health, they will be involved in helping us fund whatever grants that are there in the health side, in the health pillar, in the pillar that is education. For those educators, they will be the ones deciding, you know. And so this is going to be, we have such an enormous opportunity, and I believe we really, women have, I believe I have a moral imperative to stand up and do this.
Yes, because your name's on it, right?
And it's been on it for a long time.
I know. I've been pushing you to do this for, I guess I've known you now 15 years, and now's your time.
Well, I so appreciate being on, and I enjoyed so much all of the different things that were said, and especially the last quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, that we can do this. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Well, I really think that women are about to stand up for a lot of reasons, because I think that we have been setting back long enough, and I think that when certain things happen here in the future, that somebody has rang the bell or the whistle's gone off or whatever you want to call it, and I think the women are going to have to be reckoned with, period.
Yeah. I have to agree with
that.
Well,
thank you. Yes, we're certainly in agreement.
So thank you so much for being on the program. I consider you a renaissance woman, Lynn, a renaissance woman.
Well, let's get this one done. This is my big last,
Okay. Let's do this.
We need to climb this mountain. Let's do this. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And thank you to all the listeners.
Okay. Bye-bye, Lynn. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay. All right. I'm going to close your mic, Lavendar. So, okay. So, Lynn, thank you for being on the show. And she hung up when Lavendar did. So I guess that is it for us this week. And as I said in the beginning of the show, we're going to be in Arkansas in 2 weeks, and then we'll be there for 2 weeks. So the next show will be October 29th. And until then, take care and remember to hold gratitude in your heart. Count your blessings every day. And replace judgment with compassion. Good night, everyone.
You.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.